Well, I appreciate the opportunity to be here. Excellent symposium. I'm going to try to follow on some of the things that Ratan was talking about and look then at kind of the next step. So there's a lot of reasons to move policy in the direction of trying to change our agricultural practices so that we can help mitigate greenhouse gas emissions, create carbon sinks in soils. And so I want to talk about some of the technical issues that could support those kind of policies. Now, there's a lot of needs for information on emissions and emission reductions that involve agriculture, and obviously international level in terms of countries doing greenhouse gas reporting, of treaty compliance. At the national level, we perhaps will have domestic policies here that require mitigation reductions, cap and trade. What I want to talk about today, though, is really looking down here at the local or farm level, kind of look at and say, what kind of information will help farmers evaluate different cropping practices? What kinds of approaches might be helpful for implementing federal and state programs, and maybe for participation in offset markets? Now, I would say that really I agree with Ratan that there's a lot of misunderstanding about perhaps the potential for agricultural conservation practices, for carbon sequestration, et cetera. Although I think that some of the perhaps some of the issues are also not so much of just unfamiliarity, but there's also a lot of questions out there about the environmental integrity of these kinds of activities. So, and there's various issues. Many of you are familiar with these kind of terms that get thrown around in the debates about, you know, additionality, permanence, leakage. And I think these are really important things that relate to the policy efficacy of carbon sequestration and greenhouse gas mitigation. I'm going to focus, given the time, really on measurement, monitoring, and verification issues, because I think that's probably the area in which we as scientists really have perhaps the most to contribute to this debate in terms of being able to show, are these activities actually working? Can we make estimates that are unbiased? Can the uncertainties in our estimates be reduced to acceptable levels? And can we make estimates that are transparent and cost-effective? Now, I think when we look at the criteria for acceptable quantification to support greenhouse gas mitigation policies, both in the U.S. and internationally, there's probably pretty good agreement on what sort of things we want to have. We want to have, obviously, acceptable accuracy and precision. We know this is a really complex set of issues and processes, right? So it's arguably the most difficult part of the greenhouse gas emissions to really estimate. But we need to do that in an acceptable way. We need to quantify uncertainties. We have to have methods that are applicable for the entire U.S., but also have some local specificity. They have to be flexible. Ratan showed an example of all the different kinds of practices that are possibilities that people can be using. So we have to be able to account for those different activities. Cost effectiveness is an important one. We can't have systems in which the measurement, monitoring, and verification cost more than the value of what we're producing. And we also have to have systems that are going to be consistent across spatial scale. So if we're doing accounting at the national level versus project levels, we want to be using approaches that will be consistent so that things add up in the end. Okay, so there's a lot of there's several different ways that we can approach this. Certainly, the most desirable way that we would do monitoring and verification of of greenhouse gas reduction policies would be to do direct measurements. You know, that's our benchmark. That's what we would, under ideal circumstances, have the most confidence in. Unfortunately, that's something that is probably not going to be attainable for for reasons of cost and practicality. Now, I had meant to, during the coffee break, get in here and make a slight edit, and I didn't manage to figure out how to do the editing on the system, but I'll just describe what I was going to have. Was another button under here which would say something like emission factor approach. In other words, something like the Chicago Climate Exchange, in which there would be a broad factor that would be applied for a particular practice. And in that case, I would also have, imagining that there, probably a yellow X coming in as well for a different reason. Those kind of systems that we have, like in CCX, for example, are where we're looking at broad practice-based accounting, are easy to implement. They're, you know, can be fairly transparent, but I think there's some major disadvantages in terms of both how to, in terms of not capturing the spatial heterogeneity of emission reductions and carbon sequestration that's actually occurring on the landscape. And for that reason, that kind of a single factor approach, I think, it also is fairly inefficient economically in terms of policy. So what we really need is a way in which we can capture some of that spatial heterogeneity, to have that flexibility. We need to be able to integrate lots of different practices and come up with methods that are soil and climate specific and can also produce unbiased estimates with known uncertainties. And I think the ways in which we can do that, and this is really I think where the community is moving towards, is to use our process-based models, our empirical models, and support those with a coordinated measurement system. And so I want to talk about what we've been doing in our laboratory and together with other folks in USDA as one example towards this approach, but talking, again, more generally about the approach itself. And many of you might be familiar with this, a system that we've developed together with USDA to basically produce an online web-based tool that was designed so that farmers could go in themselves and evaluate their different cropping systems. And it was originally designed for cropland and grassland soil carbon, but now there's a new version which we're currently testing that includes N2O emissions, agroforestry, and as well as perennial woody crops. I won't belabor this to a great degree, but I think the main point is that we have some technologies in terms of process-based models, of empirical models. We have lots of data that's available in USDA and other sources, and if we want to make systems that are available to folks to use, so it's not just the groups in Temple or Fort Collins or Gainesville that can do these things, is to find a way to put those together into relatively easy to use decision support systems. And I think there's capability now to do that with some of the basically using smart interfaces and databases. So for example, in the Comet system, you select a location, define a parcel of land, specify something about the soil characteristics, cropping histories, tillage management, nutrient management, and then calculate and produce a report. And so I think there are, we're really at the point now of being able to develop some of these decision support systems that can handle some of this complexity about all the different options that are out there, handle some of the spatial variability in terms of the response of management systems. But that's, it sounds good, but I think I want to point out a couple of things that I think we really need to do. But first, let me just point out one example. I was talking about the issue of spatial heterogeneity. And so this is looking at one kind of an example of looking at the response of no-till adoption in the Corn Belt. And as Ratan mentioned before, we know that, yes, on average, perhaps our long-term sites show that, all else being equal, more often than not, adoption of no-till increases soil carbon over a 10 or 20 or 30 year period. But we also know that there's a big range in responses. At individual, depending on the conditions, it can be negative. It can be greater than that. If we're using a sort of a one size fits all, then that's what we're representing. And there's really a lot of to be lost in terms of designing efficient policies with this kind of a one size fits all. And instead, I think if we have these kind of process-based models supported by the kinds of databases and other information we have the opportunity to begin to capture some of that variability that exists, say within a region such as the Corn Belt. Okay, I'll mention. How am I doing for time?
Got
2 minutes? Okay, let me jump past this. Okay, well, I'll quickly say. So that was a little bit about the work we're doing with Comet VR. There's an effort that's ongoing now, which is also to do more full farm-level greenhouse gas accounting with something called Comet Farm. It's the major difference between that is it's going to look at all agricultural sources. It also is going to have the capability to use things like soil maps and other kinds of spatial interfaces to get more accurate estimates of what's going on a particular farm. I wanted to mention a couple things in closing, and that is that really I think we're just at the beginning of developing some of these kind of technologies, and there's a couple of areas which I think are absolutely crucial that we develop. One is to begin to bring in remote sensing in a much more concerted effort to bring that into these kinds of systems. I think unfortunately we perhaps don't have the most ideal sensors right now, but certainly we have a lot of the technology is developing very rapidly to get assistance from this side. I would say maybe in the short term that the other area that we really can make major advances on is getting information from soil monitoring networks to help reduce the uncertainties in these kind of model-based assessments. As one example, in the Comet VR work, we're basically using existing long-term sites where carbon has been measured and we've seen changes over time. But as you can see here, there's not so many locations where we really have a good measurement record of what's been happening with soil carbon. So we need to move towards developing a national scale soil measurement network to support these kinds of assessment tools. And I think that's, we need to do that in a way that we can represent all major land uses. So not just where the long-term sites have been put historically, but other places in which really the data is not well represented. These kind of monitoring systems should represent on-farm conditions, not just what's out on the experiment site. I think there's an excellent opportunity to link into an existing national resource inventory that's collected information about land use and management over about the last 25 years, but we haven't actually taken measurements of soil carbon at those locations. So if we have those kind of measurements in the future, we can begin to attribute changes to measurements. We won't have to measure in everybody's field, but perhaps if we can measure in something like 5,000 or perhaps even 10,000 locations, which is roughly about, I guess 10% of or less of, or actually 1% or 2% of the National Resource Inventory locations, we can begin to develop a database of on-the-ground carbon changes, and I think you can extend the same logic slightly different to look at N2O. But So I just would like to conclude then with the idea that there's certainly the possibility of developing robust quantification decision support tools, and we need those kind of tools if we're going to develop mitigation policies that the naysayers, if you will, are going to find credible. Certainly practice-based approaches are going to be easier and cheaper to develop and monitor, but they're going to have higher uncertainty. It would be great if we could do direct measurements of carbon on the fly behind the tractors, maybe someday. I don't think we can do that now. But I think we need to develop these practice-based approaches at a more local scale and develop the capabilities of doing that so that we capture some of that spatial heterogeneity, and that will make it possible to make more effective, economically efficient policies. And really, one of the areas I think that are probably the greatest needs towards moving in that direction is to get additional information from a coordinated on-site network, and to, as many others have talked about, to sort of continue to improve our models so that we'll be positioned when called upon to provide the science to support mitigation that will have a positive, credible impact. So, thanks.
Thank you. Thanks.